This is Strange Harbor.
4,500 years, 2,500 BC. It's called it's VA 243. It's in a museum in Berlin. It's well dated. Called the Granting of the Plow. But this is what makes this special right here. Solar system, right. Sun, Mercury, Venus, Earth, in their relative sizes, mind you. Earth, Moon, Mars, and then, what should be here? This should be the asteroid belt. This is Nibiru, folks. Nibiru. Jupiter, Saturn, Pluto as a moon of Saturn, Uranus, Neptune. Notice that it's only a little bit bigger than Uranus, Neptune. It's about 3 times bigger than Earth. Did it occur to any of you that we were looking at a cylinder seal carved 4,500 years ago that had Uranus in it that we only discovered in 1781 when our telescopes got good enough to see it? It had Neptune when we discovered in 1846 when our telescopes got good enough to see it, and Pluto, which we discovered in 1930 when our mathematicians got good enough to tell our astronomers where to look for the thing, because it was so small. What are the Sumerians doing knowing about that? Furthermore, what are they doing writing in one of their tablets that if you look at these two, Uranus and Neptune, in the heavens, meaning right out on them, they look like blue-green watery twins? When we didn't find that out, we thought they were just big old gas bags like Jupiter and Saturn until Voyager went out there in 86 and 89 and found that, lo and behold, they really are blue-green watery twins. What the Sumerians said 4,500 years ago. Furthermore, they didn't count the way we do. Earth was not the third rock from the sun to them. It was number 7. So that means they were counting from out here and they were putting Pluto in its correct place. What are they doing with all that knowledge? Well, they make no bones about it. They say everything that we know, everything that we are, everything that we have comes from the people living on Nibiru. The people living on Nibiru came to Earth and gave us everything that we have, everything that you know, our great culture. What's the proof of that? Is there any proof that any ancient advanced civilization was ever on Earth at any point in the dim or distant past? Yes, yes, the megalithic structures out there, the pyramids, Tiahuanaco, Baalbek, Teotihuacan, Stonehenge, you name it, a couple of dozen of them. All of those are impossible for human beings to recreate today. And yet we are told in another one of these great fantasies that they were somehow created by people in ancient times, ancient Egyptians or ancient Sumerians or anybody. And it's just absolute malarkey, impossible.
Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange. This is Strange Harbor.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. We talk about cryptozoology, Sasquatch, Dogman. We talk ghosts, UFOs, all sorts of fun stuff. I am Johnny Manson, and she is MUFON investigator Sherita Seuss.
Keeping it real with UFOs.
And our guest today, Miss Irina Scott, PhD.
She is just a wonderfully educated woman from the University of Missouri and veterinarian in medicine, in physiology. And guess what? She is an experiencer. She's going to share some of that with us today. She was a volunteer astronomer at the Ohio State University Radio Observatory, and her publications include books, works in peer-reviewed scientific journals. I could go on and on. She's just fabulously smart and well-written, and gee whiz, hello, Irina.
Hello. Thank you for those remarks.
Oh, you're quite welcome. I'm so excited to have you here. You are someone who speaks out to the public and to special groups like MUFON, and that's where I first heard of you, and you've probably been to the conventions or conferences as well.
Yes, I gave a talk at the last National MUFON meeting before the COVID, 2019.
Oh, okay. That's great. Yeah, only special guests get to go there because there are many people that talk about experiences or UFOs, but you have an interesting case simply because it started when you were so young.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell us a little bit about that, Irina?
Well, what's different about this and most cases is that Jenny Randall's in the book Star Children talked about people having UFO experiences like small orbs in their bedroom when they're real young. And we saw a small orb in our bedroom. I didn't realize for many years that it had anything to do with UFOs until I read her book. What was unique is that my sister and I had a small orb in our bedroom when we were tiny children, before we knew anything about UFOs or anything else. And then we had another sighting later when we were adults. And so far as I know, we're the only people that have ever had that happen, to have a bedroom sighting when you were kids and then another one together when you're adults. Our event when we were kids was as close as we can figure. I was about 6 and she was about 4. And we were poor and in an old farmhouse attic, sleeping in beds on either side of the attic. And it was night, but it was a clear night, and I'm pretty sure of that, because everybody in the family remembered it, even though it was weird and we didn't know what was going on. But it was an attic room, and it had walls that slant up toward the ceiling, about 3 feet of space between the walls at the ceiling. And what I remember is I woke up, and this thing was flying around in our bedroom. This was way, way back. All we had was a radio, and we got that after we got electricity, but we didn't have media. We'd never heard of UFOs or anything else, or aliens or spaceships or anything like that. And anyway, this thing was flying around the room. It looked like a little piece of hot iron, and it glowed, and it was dark. It was just interesting, and I looked at it and watched it, and it came kind of close to our heads. It flies, you know, around the room, just a browsing-like motion. And then I noticed that it knew where things were. I guess that's what you would call it. It didn't run into walls or furniture or anything. It would avoid going around, so it hit anything. If it came to a wall, it turned before it got to the wall. And so I thought, this is pretty odd, even though, you know, I was a kid and I didn't know much about anything back then. And so we watched it, and then after a while it flew up to the ceiling, and it didn't hit the ceiling though. It knew where the ceiling was, and it turned before it got to the ceiling, and it flew along the ceiling, and there was a chandelier in the middle of the ceiling that was turned off, and without feeling its way around or anything, it began to circle a chandelier between the chandelier and the wall, and it knew where everything was.
Wow.
And it circled and circled and circled, and then finally it just went a spiral down under the chandelier. Well, for some reason, we both just suddenly became terrified with the worst terror you could imagine, and ran out of the room shrieking, and fell down the stair steps and hit the door, and ran shrieking to our parents, and they didn't believe us.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, the room was closed. There was a closed window and door, and a door to the other room was closed. So we didn't know how it got in or what it was. And it was, like I said, several years before I ever heard of UFOs, and quite a number of years before I read Jenny Randall's book. If that happened to one person, people would say, oh, you imagined it or you dreamed it. Well, we were both awake. We apparently woke up about the same time, but we weren't talking to each other, and I didn't know she saw it. She apparently knew that I was awake, but I didn't even know she was awake. And so it was pretty much an independent experience. And we talked about it when it happened, and later I decided to give a report to UFO group many years later. Asked several members of the family to write up what they remembered, and they remembered it too. So I think it was because it just terrified us. And so that was the first experience I had.
You had these experiences as a child. Did you lose time, or was it basically, it was almost like an introduction to what would come into your life later?
I have no idea. Since I read Jenny Randall's and all that, which is years later, I wondered how the thing got in the room and things like that.
Sure.
And I also wondered why we both apparently woke up at the same time and then suddenly became terrified at the same time. And so I wondered if there was some kind of, like, mind control or something going on. But I wondered that years later, at that time, I just remember being terrified, and I didn't even ask those questions until quite a long time later. So there's no way to know.
Many individuals that have the experience that you had or something similar use a hypnotherapist to kind of search their memory for anything that might have been forgotten. Have you done that at all?
Yes. Bud Hopkins, the ufologist, tried to hypnotize me, and two doctors did, but I just don't go into trance whatsoever. So hypnosis has no effect on me.
Yeah, you're quite a scientist, and whenever you're using science and you have that kind of mindset, it's very hard for people to get you away from what you like to control. I have that problem. And it's not a surprise. When you talk about Star Children, I've read that book in the 70s, I think it was, and basically there were physical things about the body that could clue you that you were a star child. Did you read that, and what did you think about it?
I read it, but I don't remember of physical things.
Yeah, there were things like missing ribs, not having as many as the normal human body, different things like that. And I always thought that was interesting, but I'd have to reread it. Now, you did you have experiences after that, Irina?
Yeah, and my sister and I had a really weird experience many years later together again.
Wow.
At that time, we were grown up and everything. I was working for the Defense Intelligence Agency in photography as a photogrammetrist, and my sister was going to Drew University in New York, and we were both on the Eastern Seacoast, and so we decided to go up to the New England states and look around just for a vacation. Neither of us were into UFOs or anything at that time, or even thought about it. I picked up some coworkers and drove up from Washington, D.C. to New York, where she was, and picked her up. And we drove on up to Boston, and we got there when it was daylight. And so we decided to look around some more. And so I drove up into New Hampshire, because it was kind of on the outer belt, off the outer belt. We went for a ways up there and came back, and I took some pictures. I found out later that we were probably in some of the area that the Hill abduction took place. Not that that had anything to do with it, and I didn't pay attention to it at that time. But anyway, we came back to Boston, and we started looking for motels, and everything was filled up.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided to leave and look around the outer belt and, you know, around that area. And so we were leaving. We saw this. As we were leaving, we saw this white light to the south of us. It was blinking, and there was an airport. It was a Norwood Memorial Airport south of us, and we could see airplanes turning their landing lights on and flying in and landing and everything. Everything was normal, except for this white light that was blinking. It seemed to be flying around too, and my sister kept saying, "This is odd." And I kept telling her it's a helicopter, and she kept saying maybe it's a UFO. And at that time, we both admitted to each other that we'd seen UFOs before, and I even mentioned the thing we saw in our bedroom. And but anyway, I thought she just flipped her lid, and she kept saying she thought this was odd.
Huh.
And I wasn't paying attention because I was driving looking for a hotel, and she was paying a lot more attention to it than I was. And so we got off the outer belt, and we're going down Route 95, which is the freeway that goes up and down along the coast. And we came to a woods, and in the woods there was this ball of light. It looked like a basketball. It seemed to be on the ground. I'm not sure. I couldn't tell for sure because it was dark. And on the inside of it, there was a light that seemed to be going through a spectrum, like from red and blue, and it would gradually blend into blue and then blend into red. Mm-hmm. And it kept doing that. And I couldn't imagine what it was. And then the inside of our car lit up in green. And I couldn't imagine what that was either. And I looked at the ball thing, which I thought, you know, if the car lit up in green and there's some strange ball of light around, maybe they were connected, but the ball of light was never green. And I couldn't see any green anywhere except inside our car. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. But anyway, the green, after a while, went out. It wasn't on very long. And we kept driving along. And then my sister started yelling at me to stop, 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 because this other thing she was watching was going to go over the road. And I stopped, and I was going to point at it and tell her she was crazy. Look, it's a helicopter. And I started to do that, and I saw a meteor way off, and right where I saw the meteor, this thing came over the trees. Well, at that point, I realized she was right and I was wrong. And this thing came over the trees. It was low and slow, and it had seven squares on the side that looked just like windows. And it had a red light on one end, a small and blinking red light on one end, and green light on the other. And it went across perpendicular to our line of sight. It didn't come toward us or anything. And it was very, very clear. You could see seven, and we discussed whether we thought these were panels or windows, and we'd both seen blimps over freeways that had lighted sides and things, and neither of us thought that these were panels. We both thought we were looking through windows. And they were going through sort of a pattern, like, I can't remember exactly the pattern. It was like the first three windows would blink, and then the and then all four, all seven, and then the last four, something like that. I wrote down notes right afterwards, but I couldn't remember exactly the blinking pattern. But so it was doing this blinking, and I had I was taking pictures of a regular camera, but I also had a Polaroid camera in the trunk with high-speed film in the car, and I was trying to get the camera out, find it in the dark, and get the film in and everything. And then I did, and I was just ready to take a picture, and it was been a fantastic picture of this thing over the freeway. And, you know, if I get two or three pictures and get them in stereo, it was dark, but I still had this high-speed film, and I could have got something, I think. But just then, a truck driver drove over, and since I had the camera up ready to take a picture, he came beside me and started talking to me. And he asked me what I was doing. And so I pointed at it, and I thought my sister knew it was there. Maybe she didn't, but anyway, I pointed at it, and it was this big thing that you couldn't miss. And he just rotated around the opposite direction, pointed his head in the total opposite direction, and said, "I don't see anything." And then he turned back around, and I was pretty creeped out at that point. And so he said the same thing again. And I pointed, and I didn't say UFO or anything like that, strange man. I just acted like it was an airplane around the airport or something. And he rotated around the opposite direction, looking in the exact opposite direction, and said, "I don't see anything." And then he turned around, looked at me again, and he pointed to his head like the crazy sign, and he went back to his truck. Well, I had just missed the picture, an unbelievable good picture. And so there was a hill on by the freeway, and I thought, I was afraid to take pictures in the freeway. The thing was a little bit farther away, and I was afraid I'd get lens flares, and so I was going to climb up the hill, run up the hill, and see if I could get a better shot with my camera. And my sister and I had an argument then, and she apparently didn't want me to run up the hill. And I kept telling her she had to guard the car from the truck driver because he was crazy. And apparently, I just found out recently that she apparently didn't know the truck driver was there. But anyway, I ran up, and at that time, the object had started circling the airport. And it was going in a pattern where it would go from a half circle north to south, south to north. and blink on twice, then north to south, another half circle, but it was so fast you couldn't even see it. And it just kept doing that. But that was after I took the picture, when I ran up the hill, it was still moving toward the airport, but it was so far away you couldn't see the seven windows. You could just see one blinking spot.
Uh-huh.
And I did get a picture of it, which I didn't understand until years later. But I came back with my camera, and by that time it was circling the airport. And then I thought, you know, I wanted to get a better picture because this was just unbelievable. And so I was going to go on the freeway, and I thought it would go the opposite direction for some reason. We were going south, but I thought it was going to go north. And so I was going to go to the next intersection on the freeway and turn the car around and then come back. Well, I got on the freeway, and the truck driver got right in behind me and started following me. And he had his bright lights on. He was right on my bumper. And I was blinded because these bright lights were shining in my mirror. I couldn't see anything, and I couldn't figure out what to do. And I switched lanes several times and slowed down and speeded up. And I thought about stopping to ask him what was going on, but I was scared of him, so I didn't. And he just followed me and chased me. And I finally had the accelerator floored. I was going as fast as I could. He just stayed right behind me, even though it was a truck. And so finally I decided from the left-hand side of the road that I'd swerve off at an intersection, as close to the intersection as I could get. And he wouldn't suspect. It was very dangerous to do that because somebody might be coming faster on the right-hand lane. I couldn't see behind me. But I did it, and we survived. I went back, and at first he was still circling the airport. The object was circling the airport, and then it started north. And so we followed it. And I had to go to different roads and things to keep following it. And finally, I was on this real deserted road, gravel road, with holes in it and houses like miles away from each other and no way to turn around. And it was just going a little bit faster than my car could go. And so I finally just gave up because I was tearing up the car and turned around. And we didn't find any more hotels. And we went back to my sister's dorm. And so I stayed, and I waited for the people I was supposed to take back, but they didn't appear for some reason. And Bud Hopkins had asked, "Do you have missing time?" Well, it seemed like maybe we did, but we'd both forgotten our watches, and there really wasn't any way to figure it out. It seemed like we arrived at New York later than we should have. But anyway, then I drove back to... Then I drove back to Washington, D.C. and had a poltergeist experience, and then things were over with after that.
You have had lots of experience. You're the poster child for an experiencer, and, you know, it's probably not even finished, Irina. It's very possible you could have more adventures.
More with physicist Irina Scott coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
Welcome to Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. Our guest today, author, physicist, Irina Scott, PhD, and we've been talking about one of her early experiences with UFOs.
That truck driver, it sounds like they projected in your head, specifically, because you had the camera, because your sister never saw the truck driver.
Well, I just figured that out. I always thought my sister saw the truck driver, and 2 weeks ago, she found a letter that she wrote to my mother that day when we got back, and then I asked her, "Did you see the truck driver?" because I just assumed she did. And she said, "No, I mean, she saw him following us, but she didn't see him talking to us.
Oh.
And I just realized that recently.
Interesting.
That was pretty creepy.
It is creepy. And, you know, we want to warn our listeners that you don't run toward a UFO that lands.
Right.
And if one is following you, you want to get somewhere that's highly public and make sure that you are not one of the people that are taken.
Yeah, you're right. And I guess she was scared that I was running toward it. And I didn't even think about it because I just thought, oh, I've got to get that picture. But I guess I kind of did, although I didn't actually realize it at the time.
You're a scientist. Of course you're going to run after something nuts. And, you know, of course you will. And my hat's off to you because I would have done the same crazy thing. I am amazed by how many books and what wonderful books that you've created. You have one called Sacred Corridors, and you cover things like Blue Book, the Wright-Patterson Airfield, Roswell, and something called Battelle Memory Metal. Can you tell us about that?
I work at a place called Battelle Memorial Institute, and it's a scientific place. They're the developers of the Xerox, worked with the atomic bomb and Manhattan Project and all kinds of things. They're a top research organization. I think they're the top independent, the top non-government research organization in the world. They also manage like Hanford Nuclear Site and that sort of thing. So they're well known for their science. And back when Project Blue Book was going on, Project Blue Book wanted a secret study by scientists of the observations from Project Blue Book. And this was to be top secret. And the place they hired was Battelle. Well, this was interesting because what they were supposed to do was to develop a questionnaire that got discrete things from people's observations and then put everything in a computer and did some analysis, which was pretty interesting. And it was top secret. And they got interesting results because they had about 13,000 observations. And out of that, they culled them down to about 3,000. And they divided them up into cases where good scientists looked over the data and found ones that were never identified and compared these to ones that were later identified as known objects. And they came out with real significant differences with this, which basically showed that UFOs exist. What was odd about the study was the people that were named being concerned with the study were metallurgists, and that wasn't exactly what they were studying. They were studying how to make a questionnaire and how to do statistics, so you'd think a statistician or something would be who worked on it. But the people listed were metallurgists. Anyway, there was good evidence that Roswell debris had been sent from Roswell to Wright-Patterson. People wondered if some of this material might have gone to Battelle, because Battelle was just really noted for being having top scientific metallurgists. Years later, another person I published on this, somebody that we both know at Battelle, was dating a young woman, and her father was a metallurgist at Battelle. And the father had just informally told him that he was working on a very interesting project that involved UFO crash in New Mexico, and he was studying metal, and he was trying to figure out some form of writing on a beam. I mean, that wasn't anything that made the newspapers or anything.
Of course not.
That was way back in 1952, and it was way before anybody heard anything about Roswell. And we both knew the person that said that, and he was a scientist at Battelle, too, that worked on mass spectrometry and everything. He was perfectly reliable. So we published it, I think it was around 1994 or something. Later, they wrote it up in one of Carey and Smith's books, and then it made a lot of news, as possibly this was memory metal. And we even found out that some of the scientists that were involved in Nitinol, which is later developed into memory metal, that some of these scientists worked with the same scientists that had told the man about working with the metal from Roswell. And so it was kind of interesting.
Do you think that the information that was on the panel of Memory Metal, the writing, would ever be opened up by the government to allow people to try to figure out what it says?
I don't know if he ever figured out.
Huh.
He was just supposed to examine it. And Mattel takes contracts from other places, such as they had the contract from Project Blue Book to study UFOs and that sort of thing. They don't give out the information unless the company that contracts gives out the information. I mean, it's not, they're
sure.
supposed to be confidential about what they do.
Right, as a private company, sure. That, are they still a company, Mattel?
Oh, yeah, they're a big company.
Uh-huh.
Mattel Memorial Institute.
Where is it at?
It's in Columbus, Ohio, right next to Ohio State University, and they both work together quite a bit.
Interesting.
It's a large company.
I'll be darned. They're probably still doing the same kind of stuff, huh?
Well, I don't think they're working on UFOs. I mean, they could be, but they're still doing a lot of research.
Do you think that Memory Metal had any alien elements to it that aren't found on Earth?
I don't know. All we could find was reports on people that study things like nitinol and things like that. But there would be no way to find out.
Okay.
Unless somebody published it, unless the government published it or something like that.
Sure. So this is from your book, Sacred Corridors. Where can people pick up your books?
It's from Amazon, and I have a website just called Irina Scott. Anybody can get it on the name Irina Scott. And I have, I show my books, and anybody can just click on the book and it goes into Amazon.com.
So it's IrinaScott.com?
Yeah.
Okay.
But just put in Irina Scott and I think it should show up.
One of the things I found really interesting is that you were on the board of directors for MUFON. That's my company, the Mutual UFO Network. And you were on there for almost 10 years.
Uh-huh.
What did you think about where they were going in their future and the direction and the way we save information that's gathered from all over the world?
Well, I think they're doing a good job there. I think it's the best place anywhere that anybody's gathering information, unless the government has secret things, which they might, because they're developing their computers and advertising on how to get information so that there's some knowledge of, you know, if somebody reports a UFO to the local airport or something, they may refer them to MUFON and tell them to call there.
Oh, okay. Well, just to tell our listeners, you can go to MUFON by MUFON.com, and, you know, you can report a UFO sighting or anything. I wanted to ask you about your book today. It's called 70 Years of Lies.
Uh-huh.
Tell me a little bit, what kind of lies? I mean, I'm familiar with a lot of the lies, but I don't think our listeners are.
Well, what basically is, I was saying that there's a cover-up by the government of information about UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to start at the beginning and go through history until today. And I started with Kenneth Arnold and discussed some of the things. He was the first person that reported possible UFOs. There was some funny behavior with the government during his report.
What year would that be?
It was 1947.
So Roosevelt was the president, right?
I guess.
The reason I ask is because there are people in the UFO industry, ufologists, who believe that a document was signed by aliens and the President Roosevelt to determine what they could and couldn't do on this planet, the Greys. Had you heard that at all?
I heard something about it. I'm trying to remember who was president in 1947.
I know he was around then sometime.
Truman was the president in 1947.
In 1947.
I think it's something called the Truman document that was something like that. It was part of the MJ-12.
MJ-12, yeah. Yeah, the Majestic 12, the people who made all the decisions about UFOs and how to keep it quiet and to keep it from the public, right?
Yeah.
And then you talk about all that in your book, and then you go through the years until the present?
Uh-huh.
That's amazing. What are some of the ones that are the most recent that you can recall?
Well, recent, there's the case of the Mammoth that was a Navy incident that involved a radar visual encounter from 2004. And this was a aircraft carrier, and another aircraft carrier, I think it was a Princeton, was there too. And their radar detected a group of UFOs, or what, you know, whatever they were. They didn't know what they were. And so they sent jets out to check them out. And part of this was on radar, and part of it was visual. A pilot in a Super Hornet fighter went to the area where one of the objects was and looked down and saw something underwater, I think, and then it appeared above water. I think it was called the Tic Tac object because it was shaped like a Tic Tac. It didn't have wings or propellers or anything else. It was just shaped like a Tic Tac.
Mm-hmm.
And so they saw this, and then just instantly the object appeared at this point where they were supposed to make a rendezvous, and just it traveled so fast that it was just unbelievable. And so anyway, they've used some of the radar information from that and from another encounter, and the Pentagon recently said that yes, these radar pictures are real, the videos. And so this made quite a bit of news because it was fairly well documented that the radar operators and the pilot and everything said this happened.
That's amazing, because I know 2017 they released something similar with a UFO that was flying so fast they managed to get it on FLIR and track it while they were in their jets. And that sucker was moving fast. So this is fascinating. So basically, from a very young age, you've had these experiences. Why do you suppose you and perhaps your sister had these events happen to you?
I have no idea. That's one reason I'm studying this, is to try to figure out what's going on. I have no idea. But I was very lucky so far, I'll knock on my head, that I've had other witnesses. Really everything I saw.
Oh, my goodness, so. Yes. I wonder if you've thought about, how do I put this? There are people in our industry and ufologists that think that we're supposed to be more enlightened, to bring our vibrations up to a higher level, to be kinder to our planet, and to eventually ascend. What do you think about that?
Well, I definitely think we ought to preserve the planet and try to preserve the wildlife and everything, but I mean, you can't disagree with that.
No.
But I don't know. I mean, there's the quantum theory, which is a lot different from the normal physical way people think. I mean, people have always believed in time and space and everything like that, that the reality is real. And with the quantum theory, it just puts a lot of our basic assumptions that we've always learned in physics and everything, just
throw it out the window.
Yeah.
Well, so we're talking about entanglement, quantum entanglement. We're talking about photons. We're talking about how one object can be in the same place at the same time. Different places at the same time. And it really kind of messes with your head when you follow the quantum theory, because we can't really put our finger on it. We can't, you know, I mean, Schrodinger, didn't he bring all this up with the dog or the cat that was both alive and dead inside of a box?
Yeah, that reality isn't real until it has an observer, and then it coalesces in reality. I mean, that's totally different from our past view of how we just looked. Our past view was we just looked at a clock and it had all these cogwheels and everything went according to whatever physics was planned. And now it's a whole lot different.
Well, yeah. I mean, reality is only something that you observe. If you don't observe it, it does something different. They prove that through trying to send photons through that hole. There are two different holes, and there's a splitter, and they throw these photons at it. And if you look at it, it goes in the holes differently than if you don't look at it. How the heck did that happen? And then, are we using our minds to move photons? I mean, it's nuts.
Well, yeah, I mean, with the entangled particle experiments they're showing, that they've actually measured, is that if one particle in the entangled particle group is in one state, well, no matter where the other one is, it'll be in the other state. So that if one's on the other side of the universe, well, then the other one instantly, just instantaneously, is in the opposite state. And it's not something, you know, that you'd understand. It's just incomprehensible. But, you know, I'd say, in my opinion, that our ideas of time and space are probably primitive, and maybe there's more, a lot more complex things such as instantaneous reactions, which that is.
Which of the lies from your book today, 70 Years of Lies, that seems so outrageous to you that the government would lie about when it was so obvious to everyone that this was just crazy and that it was true and it was UFO?
Well, I think the whole thing in general is, for example, the study I was talking about with Tell Memorial Institute, this was done under Project Blue Book, and Project Blue Book, the public side of it, was debunking. I mean, you know, if somebody said, I see a UFO landing in my yard, they would say, oh, you see Venus, not that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But there was a secret side where they were actually trying to study UFOs. And after that, there were a number of things, like there was UFOs over Washington, and there was UFOs that they got good evidence were looking at a big international military exercise and things. And they had fairly good evidence of UFOs, and then suddenly everything just disappeared, and they totally said nothing exists like that.
Yeah.
And they did the condom study and said that UFOs don't exist. I mean, that wasn't what they really said. They really said they're not anything to worry about so far as national security. But when they come to that conclusion, that's basically saying they don't exist. And even the condom report, the scientists that actually worked on it, a lot of them disagreed, and they couldn't explain one third of their data and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it wasn't scientific at all.
Yeah, yeah. So orbs of light or a lightning ball. Okay, gotcha.
Uh-huh. Lightning balls are supposed to be physical things that they understand. There's still controversy, though. A lot of scientists don't believe that lightning balls exist either, ball lightning. But I think there's some evidence that they do. But they're very mysterious, and scientists can't figure out how they work either. That's something I didn't know to start with. I thought they were all explained and everything, but they aren't.
Isn't that amazing? I am so excited that you were able to join us today. I appreciate all of your answers and talking about your books. Again, this is Irina Scott, PhD. She can be reached at irinascott.com. She's an author and an experiencer. She's written multiple books that you can find on Amazon. Did you have anything to tell our listeners?
Yeah, buy my books. I did a lot of research on them, and I tried to write write them up in a scientific way.
Well, of course you did. I know I'm going to be your first in line. And when we meet up, I want you to sign it for me.
Oh, well, thank you for asking. Yes, great.
Thank you so much for joining us. And I know Johnny enjoyed it very much,
too. Oh, yeah.
Too.
Well, thank you for inviting me. And you're certainly interesting to talk to.
You'll come back on the show and be a guest again?
Of course.
Awesome.
Oh, that's great, Irina. Are you working on any new books now?
Yeah, I'm working on one about the Pascagoula. I had written the afterword for the book by Calvin Parker. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I had done more research on Pascagoula. There was a lot going on besides their abduction. That's what I'm writing about. I'm also writing about a lot of other witnesses around Pascagoula, though, too.
Maybe you can talk about it. MUFON just announced they're going to have a conference in Las Vegas.
Do you speak at conferences?
Yes, I've spoken at several, and I spoke at the big MUFON conference 2 years ago.
Okay, we'll have to have you come down to our conference here in Washington State when we get that fired back up.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I would very much like to.
Okay.
A lot goes on there, I know for sure. There's some good organizations such as yours.
Well, thanks again for spending time with us, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Well, thank you very much.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. Are we going to give away something today?
Yes, we are.
What do we want to give away today?
I am going to give a signed copy of my book called Spellcaster.
What?
Yeah, I wanted to add to someone's library. It is a beginner on how to make your own spells. It has all of the correspondences in here. It talks what, you know, everything means, like what does lead mean or lodestone or mercury.
Oh, wow.
And every flower's in here, all the crystals and gems. So, yes, I'm going to give this away and to
how
the
do we
lucky
give it away?
Person. What we want them to do is to write what they like about the show and what they would like to see in the future. What would they like us to talk about?
Okay.
We'll select someone.
Sounds like a plan, man.
That's right.
Log on to strangeharbor.net. There's a handy little contact form there, and just tell us what you think, and then we'll put you in as an entry. Or you can log on and reach out and just yell at us for being tinfoil hat wearing whack jobs.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.